The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
These two guys have Minnesota sports flowing in their veins. Mackie and Judd on Score North and ScoreNorth.com.
Could you have imagined that?
No, not at all. You know, I wanted to be up there in the ninth, and I knew I was going to get the job done. So.
Well, the home run was impressive to start. But, yeah, let's talk about that at bat in the ninth, because you do have the opportunity to be the hero in that moment. Do you allow yourself to think that way, or how do you approach that?
Absolutely. You know, that's what I live and dream for, right? That's what I want, and I want to be in those situations. And I was just looking for that slider from Presley, and he gave it to me.
There he is, the future Los Angeles Angel.
That's right.
Oh, wow.
According to Declan, Royce Lewis.
Wow.
There he is. Just very calmly telling Audra, yeah, I wanted to come up there because I knew I was going to get it done. I was just waiting for that hanging slider from Ryan Presley, and I'm here to change the franchise. Thanks for the interview, Audra.
Seems like
back to you, Dick.
Seems like a legit kid. Yes, thank you very much, Audra. Now let's talk about... Anyway, he seems like a great kid. Royce Lewis seems like a great
kid. Like you would enjoy Los Angeles in a couple months, too, so you can... get 2 months of Shohei Ohtani. That debate raged across. I saw Chad Hartman chimed in at one point on Twitter.
It got
so a little, it's a little reckless speculation among friends on Thursday. Sometimes spills over. Yeah. But this is the State of the Twins episode of Minnesota Sports with Mackie and Judd, presented by our friends at Modest Brewing, by the way, just steps away from Target Field. Old Macadac got into a couple, two, three super deluxe premium lagers. Look at that bad. That can looks awesome, too. You just feel powerful holding one of those things. They also have 19-ounce stovepipes available in and around the Twin Cities, tap room in the North Loop. So old Dex doesn't live in the neighborhood anymore, but maybe Modest can lure him back once in a while.
Easily. I'll use Modest as the next selling point when we move across the metro again a year from now. Maybe that's what I'll try to do here. We'll see if that one works for me. But I miss the patio. It's a great spot, and yes, a great spot to get a beer before a Twins game, too.
Yes, Modest. You can find them, again, just steps away from Target Field and the light rail. So, gentlemen, every single week here, we've done this now for a few weeks, and we'll keep going. Twins are in first place. We'll give you the overall snapshot, and then we'll dive into a few key topics in our weekly State of the Twins episode here. So, overall record, 28-26, two games up on the Tigers, who remain in second place above the Guardians. The Twins' offense, 15th in runs scored per game. Second in runs allowed per game. Baseball Reference gives the Twins a 78% chance to win the to make the playoffs, which it's also pretty similar for the division because they would not be a wild card team.
Yeah,
right,
that's it. No wild card.
2% chance to win the World Series. Fangraphs says 76% chance to make the playoffs, 4% chance to win the World Series. Category number one for you guys, Royce Lewis is back. And better than ever, to steal a phrase from Mike Greenberg. And you heard the clip there after the game. So he hits the three-run home run. Boom, he's off for a year. Comes back to the major league, just bonks a three-run home run. The bullpen gives it back, and we'll talk about that. And then he comes up, ties the game, a very Derek Jeter-like base hit up the middle to tie the game. The thing that strikes me the most, and I'll shut up and throw it to you guys, is his personality, his confidence, his demeanor. Correa brings a little bit of that. Buxton's just not quite that personality. There's just something very franchise-like about Royce Lewis's personality. And if all of a sudden he's healthy, he's on the field, he's playing at the level of a former number one overall pick, it can be very infectious. It'd be very interesting to see him the next few weeks and couple months to see if he can stay on the field regularly. But his demeanor and personality and just his aura really struck me after his first game.
So you're right, Phil. The most important thing is, can he stay on the field? He has torn up his ACL now twice, which at his age is a lot. But if he can, I agree completely. And what hit me is this. When he talks, and I'm not saying he's this player at all, I'm saying the personality is, to me, it reminds me of a similar personality. I see a lot of Jeter there. I see a lot of the same calm, cool, and collected. Also engaging when he wants to be. Now, because Derek could be very cold too, but there were times when he was very, you know, face of the franchise. Royce Lewis strikes me as the type of guy, and again, I know he has to stay healthy, that you could market your franchise around and that people will gravitate towards. He just has that it factor. Correa, I think, is beloved by teammates, and I think he's liked within the game by some, you know, clearly since the Trash Can banging, not all. But I think there's
Waste Management loves him, actually.
Yep. I think there's a respect for Carlos, but I don't know if it translates to the fan base as much as the Twins initially thought. Buxton has certainly come out of his shell, but the sad thing, and I'm sure we'll talk about this, is Byron's current circumstance doesn't really allow you to be all that you can be when you can't stay on the field on a regular basis. So I'm with you completely. And if you can now plug Royce in at third base and he's just your guy there, I think the opportunity here is enormous, because watching him play is fun. Watching him play baseball is fun.
Yeah, I would say with Correa, I mean, Correa is also kind of villainous, right? Like, people don't like Carlos Correa for the trash can bangs. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not just the Dodgers who, yes, booed him excessively a few weeks ago, but there's probably a good amount of people who don't like Carlos Correa simply because of that Astros scandal, with that whole collection too, Altuve, Bregman, everyone kind of involved in that. So there's kind of a black eye there. With Royce, there's definitely a more charismatic way about him. Number one overall pick, so he was kind of being groomed for this, I guess, if you will. Like, he had these expectations for sure, and it's been a long road with a couple ACL tears, and, you know, that God, that draft was now 5 years ago, 6 years ago, for whatever it was, so it feels like forever ago, and now he's finally here, and he's coming up with big hits, and against a really good team in a hard environment in Houston, against one of the best pitchers in Ryan Pressly. So, yeah, I mean, pretty damn impressive debut for a kid to come back after all those circumstances and deliver that.
I think you guys have touched on a subject I've put a lot of thought into over the weekend, even just spanning across the different teams, you know, the Twins, the Timberwolves, Vikings, even Wild. And I think part of the reason we don't fully buy into, not buy in, the reason we don't maybe flock to Target Field to watch Carlos Correa, or why he isn't necessarily embraced in the way that maybe the Twins thought when they signed him to the first contract and the second contract, he's a mercenary. He's an outsider. And we brought him in because they had some money to spend. It was a good, aggressive, I think it was a good advantageous contract that they signed, you know, at the last minute after the lockout ended a year ago. And they kind of lucked back into getting him back. But he's ultimately, at the end of the day, he's not a homegrown guy. He's certainly not from Minnesota, right? He's a mercenary hired to help the Twins. And he hasn't been great yet.
Right.
He was fine last year. But a lot of his numbers kind of came in non-high leverage situations. So, like, a mercenary's fine. You can bring on mercenaries. Like, the Vikings have had a ton of mercenary quarterbacks. Brett Favre was beloved for a couple of years because he came in right away, and he was awesome. And he led the Vikings to the best offense in the NFL and deep into the playoffs. And then, of course, as Brett Favre does, he sabotages. So, I mean, I don't think Correa is disliked by Twins fans, but he hasn't really done anything. He's off to a slow start this year. We love homegrown, and homegrown could be from Minnesota, or it could be drafted by Minnesota, or signed as a international free agent, which is the case sometimes in baseball. We love homegrown, and we love toughness and durability. So if you're Kirby Puckett, and you come up through the minor league system, and you just play every day for like 10 years, and you rise up in big moments, Kirby Puckett was the holy grail of everything we love as Minnesotans watching sports. Homegrown, tough, durable, rises up in big moments, right? Kevin Garnett, drafted as a 17, 18-year-old, top five overall pick, homegrown, played all the time, tough, rose up in big moments, right? I mean, and we could go down the list. Royce Lewis has a chance, if he can stay on the field, to check those boxes for us. He was our number one overall pick. He's charismatic. He rises up in big moments, at least throughout his, you know, small sample size in the big leagues and in the minor leagues. If he can just stay on the field and do this on a consistent basis, he will bring people back to Target Field that maybe haven't been going for the last few years.
And look, the race is on. Whoever is the star of the Twins' first playoff series win if and when it comes, is going to be loved. Like, we will.
There's room for more statues
out
there.
We will hail Correa. We will love Carlos Correa. But his payday, fair or not, signifies a guy who should help you end, if not play the key role in that streak coming to an end. Right now, Carlos Correa is a marvelous shortstop. And I'll just stop right there. He is a marvelous fielding shortstop.
And at his best, with the bat, he's a good hitter at his best, but he's not a great hitter. He's a good hitter and great defensive shortstop.
And we're not there yet with him. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Royce's demeanor, the thing that Puck had that Royce has, though, is there appears to be a genuine love for what he's doing, and he loves pressure. And the fact is, you know, 2 weeks ago, yesterday, the Twins lose. There's no question about it. There's nobody who plays that role. And he stepped up and got key hits, and then basically, like Puck did, smiled and said, "This was great." Yeah, of course. You know, the clutch gene here, we so rarely see it, right? In this godforsaken sports town, we so rarely see now that clutch gene that when we do, I think we rightfully celebrate it.
It's like a true, I mean, it is very Jeterian. We've already brought up Derek Jeter a few times, just everything from, you know, the position that he came up playing, shortstop, to the way that he stands at the plate, the way that he hits the ball to opposite field. He's not just about launch angle and home runs. Even the home run that he hit was just kind of a laser down the right field line to opposite field. He's not necessarily just looking to pull the ball with as much launch angle as possible. Right. He's kind of a throwback to like the late 90s, early 2000s, the wait on a pitch, let it get deep in the zone and pound it up the middle. Right, let it travel.
Let it travel. Baseball.
Football. Let it travel deep in the zone. So he's, yeah, I mean, he just, I guess we can keep asking this question every week. Maybe we should, because last week we had the reckless speculation. What would you trade for 2 months of Shohei Ohtani? And the Angels, by the way, lost like 4 or 5 games in a row. They dropped even further in their division. I don't know if they won yesterday, but the more that they kind of slip, the more it becomes a conversation. So this is what I was saying in our argument, Dex, is if I get ready-made, if Royce Lewis is the best player on your team, I can't justify trading him for 2 months of Shohei Ohtani. But if he goes into an 0-for-15 slump, maybe it's a different
right.
It might just change every 5 days. But that was what I was worried about losing for 6 years, what we saw yesterday.
And that's that would be still the price of admission, right? To get the best baseball player on the planet in Ohtani, and you can't just get him for free either. And I've already seen MLB Network was talking about, is he going to be a $600 million player? The trade rumors are already starting to stir on ESPN.com of the likely suitors and whatnot. So it's going to come up. But if you're the Twins and you indeed pick up the phone and you want to make that deal, I think it probably centers around Brooks Lee, if not Royce Lewis.
By the way, the Angels, just for fun, we can kind of keep this in the mix. They did win yesterday. They are now 6 games back of the Rangers in the West, 3 games over 500, and a half game up on the Mariners for 4th place in their division. So if you want that reckless speculation to turn into reality, you need the Angels to tank and hit the skids. Okay, category number 2 here, state of the Twins. Sonny Gray is doing something no one has done in 100 years. This is from Optostats. Pitchers in Major League Baseball history to be undefeated with a sub-2 ERA and no home runs allowed through the first 11 starts of the season. Sonny Gray this year, and then a guy named Eddie Seacott.
Eddie Seacott, yeah.
In 1919. Yeah. Old yeah, Eddie Seacott.
Yeah. Ed, I called him.
Easy Ed, big game, yeah. Eddie Seacott.
Ed.
So that was back in the day where like nobody hit home runs. Like Babe Ruth was just emerging in. Yeah, it was the first dead ball era. So like in a full season, starting pitchers would allow like 6 home runs. So it wasn't as hard. So we're seeing, and he, I think he got the no decision yesterday because he put the 2 runners on and then it led to the grand slam, which we'll talk about too. But what do you think of that? We're a third of the way through the season, and Sonny Gray is doing some things here that really no one's done in 100 years.
I think the man is going to get paid. I think he's going to get paid very well. I think it probably might not be here, but you know what? If you at least reap the rewards of a very good 2023, good for you. I think Sonny Gray is wired also in a way that I really like. I like watching him pitch. He doesn't give in easily. There are times when he looks like he technically should be on the ropes and rebounds. And I think there is a conversation to be had. I don't think it's as cut and dry as Twitter made it out to be, but I think there's a conversation to be had at his pitch count yesterday, even with two men put on base, if he should have been left in to try to work his way out, because his pitch count was fine. His pitch count was not the problem. It's just that he put two men on and Baldelli went and got him. But he is a pitcher that is fun to watch. There is a competitive level to him and a talent that makes it a good combination of his starts are at least going to be entertaining.
Not to mention, you can hear him grunt from the third level of Target Field every time he releases a baseball.
He's got some Rich Hill to him. Yeah. He's a salty guy for sure.
He's definitely, you know, last year he had a trouble going deep into games. He would throw a lot more pitches than he probably needed to. And, you know, yesterday I know he gets into the seventh, but, you know, he has had up games in the month of May where he only went 5, 4 1/3 and whatnot. So I don't think he's going to be the pitcher that was just absolutely dominating and cruising like he was in April. Is he a frontline starter, and do I trust him to start and deliver a win in a playoff game right now? 100%. Yes. I think Joe Ryan's probably going to end up being the better one of this group. That being said, Sonny Gray's a veteran. He's wired correctly. I trust him in a playoff game.
Dude, this is, again, this is all predicated on making it the next 3-4 months healthy and everything, but Sonny Gray, Joe Ryan, Pablo Lopez, 1-2-3 in a playoff series, they haven't run anything like that out in 30 years. I'm not saying they have a Jack Morris 91 here or any, but the closest they came was maybe because Liriano, remember in 06, Liriano went down in late August and he was out Tommy John surgery. That would have been the best rotation because it would have gone Santana, maybe Radke in game two. And then I think Carlos Silva or Boof Bonser wound up starting a playoff game against the A's that year. Can't remember who. But they haven't, like, usually you get to the number three starter in a Twins playoff series and it's like, we're out of options.
Yeah.
We're running Brian Dunsing. We're running Boof Bonser, running, you know, Randy Dobnak out there. So, yeah, if it's Sonny Gray or Joe Ryan starting number one, I mean, you at least have a really good puncher's chance in any of the playoff games you're going to play with any of those three guys.
The only question then is, and this is where it's going to be, it'd be great fun to watch, would be when do you go get your starter out, right? Because like yesterday in a playoff game, I think Gray would have melted down because he's like, okay, I put two men on, but is this bullpen? Until you get to the back end, which is also just absolutely incredible. But I think that's the most, it's clear that the Twins have made a commitment to allow their starters, and this is a great thing, to go deeper into games. The question becomes in the playoffs, how deep do you push it more? Because I will say this, if the option is the front end of the bullpen or Gray, Ryan, or Lopez, I'm probably going to say I would almost prefer to allow the starter to stay in as opposed to get a quick hook because, oh my God, it's not going exactly right.
How about this? This is kind of crazy. So just on that third time through the order, how long do you, like the question you just asked, Judd, so I just pulled this up on Baseball Reference. Sonny Gray last year was allowed to face a hitter a third time only 77 times all year. This year, he's up to 51. So he's already like way more than halfway to the number he had last year, third time through the order, and we're not even to June yet. He'll make his next start, first start in June. OPS against, third time through the order. These are some smaller sample sizes because we're talking about like 50 and 80 plate appearances, so take it with a grain of salt. But his OPS allowed the third time through the order is 70 points better this year than it was last year. And he's actually better the third time through the order than the second time through the order OPS allowed this year. Again, we're dealing in, these are, he's faced 99 hitters the second time, 51 hitters the third time. So let's see where these numbers are after some more sample size. But he's fine the third time through the order. Now, yesterday, all right, well, there's a couple guys on base, and it's the Astros. They're one of the best teams in baseball. So I kind of understand going to your bullpen, but you saw what happened. Like, does Sonny Gray have a better chance to turn a double play and get out of the inning there than allowing a grand slam three batters later? Like, maybe have,
the answer is yes.
Maybe
yes.
Have some trust in a guy who, it was 75 pitches or 80 pitches.
Yep.
And he's been fine the third time through the year. He was pissed walking off the mound.
And he should have been.
Rocco had to give him like 5 seconds of hey, nice start. And finally, he kind of like cracked his neck and handed the ball to Rocco.
He does crack his neck a lot. He's got the neck tick thing.
Have you ever seen him smile? He's like such a throwback, salty guy.
Yeah, he doesn't. He doesn't. He just labors but he's up got there like and a, screams.
But he's got like a boyish face. So it's he, weird he because you would expect him to be in a perpetually good mood. And yet Phil's right. He rarely looks like he's in a good mood.
Yeah. You know what puts Declan in a good mood? Golfing. At the Meadows at Mystic, specifically.
Absolutely. You can book some tee times here, okay? Finally, it's June. We got 90s in the forecast, just humid and heat, you know? And when I'm out there, at least I'm being, you know, drenched in sweat when I'm drilling putts at the Meadows at Mystic Lake. GolfTheMeadows.com to book these tee times, okay? They got some great cart options there, too, the GPS carts. I like to know what I'm hitting because I like to think I know that I have the right club in my bag. So the cart will tell me what I should be hitting at least. So you can go to GolfTheMeadows.com. You can also enjoy a cold one at the Meadows Bar and Grill, one of the best patios low-key around. Go to GolfTheMeadows.com to secure that tee time.
Also, speaking of the Twins, so, man, I know, Judd, you were at the ballpark a couple times this weekend. My wife and I went and bummed around on Sunday afternoon. It's just it's such a fun place to just hang out. The baseball's been kind of meh the last couple of years. This year, they're back in first place here, at least the first couple of months. Twins.com/tickets. Twins.com/tickets if you want to get out there. Those Blue Jays fans, man.
They're the best.
They do travel.
Yeah.
Very, very nicely. And they drink.
Great.
Oh, yes.
They're Canadian. Are you kidding? That's like Wisconsin, man. That's a license to just be drunk.
Dude, so what we like to do is we'll buy tickets and we basically won't sit in our seats. No judgment. And so I think we got there in like the second inning on Sunday and we just hung out for 2.5 hours or whatever. We didn't. And so at one point we were up second level railing, just overlooking like the skyline and watching the game. And this woman, probably like in her 50s, Blue Jays fan, kind of comes stumbling over just alone and leans up next to my wife. And she looks at the seltzer that my wife was drinking and says, what's that worth? And my wife was like, what? What's that worth? And she's like, well, it costs, you know, whatever, but it's probably worth this. And she, are you trying to buy it from me? Like, there's no line back here. And is that how Canadians say, how much did you pay for that? What's it worth?
Maybe.
How drunk was she?
Pretty drunk.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't.
The Canadian gal. My wife was fine at the moment.
Yeah, I don't think that's how they. I have never heard that. I've heard, you know, a boot. Canadian terms, yeah. But I've never heard what's that worth.
Yeah, huh. What's it worth? I don't know. What's it? $50. You give me $50, I'll give you the rest of my seltzer.
Give me a loonie or two.
A loonie?
That's their currency.
Okay.
That's a form.
They don't just call it the Canadian dollar?
No, they do, but they've got a form of, I don't exactly know, but it's a great term. It's called a loonie.
All right. Good for the Canadians.
Because there was one under center ice that they buried during the Olympics in Vancouver.
The loonie is the Canadian $1 coin because they have dollar and $2 coins there.
Thank you.
So there you go.
There you go.
The loonie.
Okay. The more you know. Twins.com/tickets.
Yep. Loonies.
To go hang out at the ballpark this summer.
This is Tom Bernard. Can't get enough of sports talk with Phil Mackey and Judd Zolgad? Tune in to the new Tom Bernard Show podcast Monday through Friday as Phil and Judd join me to discuss the latest sports headlines and whatever else comes to mind.
Just download the Tom Bernard Show app wherever you get your podcasts or visit TomBernardShow.com. It's another way to get more from me and Judd talking sports and having fun with Tom, and it's all at your fingertips. Download the Tom Bernard Show app now and join the conversation. All right, category number three here, state of the Twins. So we've done the positive there. We spent 20 minutes on the positive. Category number three is the bullpen is still kind of a disaster. So Brock Stewart comes in, and by the way, he was like one of their best ERA pitchers for a while, and still is. His ERA is still like a buck and a half, or a loony and a half, whatever you want to call it. But he gives up the grand slam to Jose Altuve yesterday, just an absolute missile. Jorge Lopez came in. He did pitch a scoreless inning, but just plunks the first batter that he faces, like just not ready to throw. Or maybe that was strategic. He said, you know, this guy's got a 900 OPS. I'm just going to plunk him real quick and hobble him. But the Twins bullpen statistically coming into this episode ranks 17th in win probability added, meaning that's the accumulation of when you come into a game, after you leave, did you increase your team's percentage chance to win or decrease? And it accumulates over the course of the whole season. The Twins' bullpen ranks 17th in win probability added. So it's not the worst bullpen in baseball, but if your goal is to go and do some damage in October, it's tough to just have one guy that you rely on for, you know, three outings a week and then the rest a big shrug, Mark.
Jorge Lopez's struggles concern me because he was terrible for the most part after they got him from Baltimore last year. He was really good for, what, the first month of this season. And now he's gone back to – and his inning yesterday, he sort of just didn't have control. It was weird. But I think that at the end of the day, if Lewis can stay healthy and can hit, which I think if he's on the field, he's going to hit. And if you get guys back, I'm actually more concerned about the front end of the bullpen than the bats. Like, that would be the one area where I would like to see, because the back end is fantastic. I mean, Duran is, it's ridiculous. He's unhittable. And I know he'll melt down once in a while. He'll walk guys. I get that. But I'm saying, for the most part, good luck there.
Yeah.
I think the front end of the bullpen might be right now my biggest point of just improve it. It doesn't mean it's got to be unbelievable, but it's got to give you, if you're going to take out Gray, you got to have more of a assuredness, especially again in a playoff game, that the next guys that you bring in are going to hold that thing down, not throw what was an absolute cookie on the Altuve Grand Slam, because that pitch was a ridiculously, I mean, he was going to hammer that every single time.
Easier said than done, but it's probably easier to acquire bullpen guys and then make your lineup better overnight. Like, it's just going to be incredibly difficult to acquire new talent that makes your lineup go from eh to, oh my God, really great overnight. You can find one or two really good relievers, then all of a sudden that just slots everyone down, just like a rotation, right? Like, once you get an ace in, well, now that guy that was pitching above where he should have been now becomes a two or a three, and it makes life a little bit easier. So I think the Twins will probably look to buy bullpen arms. They're always available at the trade deadline. I know teams are a little skittish on overpaying for bullpen arms because it's just a little bit of a commodity and everyone always wants it. But I think it makes sense for them to go after bullpen help than it does looking for someone to hit number, you know, hit fifth in their lineup by the trade deadline.
You know who is, and I'm not saying he's going to be your number two behind Duran, but Jose De Leon has been, and he's 30 years old now. He was once one of the top pitching prospects in baseball like 8 or 10 years ago. I remember stashing him in my deep fantasy baseball league for about 3 or 4 seasons. Like, this is the year that Jose De Leon's going to finally break out. He's had injuries, and he really hasn't even pitched that much in the major leagues. He had a rocky first outing in Los Angeles against the Dodgers. And then I think he might have given up. Yeah, he gave up a run, too, against the Angels. But the last three outings against the Giants and then twice against the Blue Jays, he's given you a bunch of scoreless innings. He's only allowed 3 hits in like 5 1/3. I'm just saying, like, he was at one point, he's not just a guy off of a waiver scrap heap. He was legitimately one of the best young pitchers in baseball.
You'll be proven right is what you're saying.
No, I think at this point that ship has sailed. Once a guy turns 38 years later, I think there's a statute of limitations on your take.
All right, okay.
But I would be willing to see what happens with him the next couple of months too. But I agree with Declan. The bullpen's kind of a train wreck, but it's the easiest thing to fix on the fly in the middle of the season. You have to give up something to get good relievers, but they're not. They wouldn't be looking for a closer. They'd be looking for a lefty and then maybe, you know, a Lopez-like piece, how they acquired him last year. But it does become tough when you pull a starting pitcher after 75 pitches and then the replacement, Brock Stewart, comes in and just soils himself. So, And then category number 4 here, it's called Byron Buxton, here we go again, maybe. And Judd, you tweeted this out over the weekend. So Rocco Baldelli told our guy Corey Provis on the radio broadcast that you can see Buxton's knee is actually causing some issues right now. You did the math. In 17 games since May 7th, Buxton's hitting 188 with a 297 on base percentage and not a lot of power. He has 2 home runs. He's batted 4 in, but he just hasn't been the same guy over the past 3 weeks, and Rocco confirmed, yeah, it's still that chronically injured knee that's flaring up.
And he brought up the fact that I didn't go on Sunday. I watched the game on TV, but you went, Phil, and Baldelli brought up the fact that you could see he simply couldn't run well. Like, he hit a couple ground balls, I think, and he has not been going pedal to the metal every time trying to go to first base this season, but he did. I think it was against the Dodgers, and he clearly tweaked it, and now he just can't. I think the reality is this, and it's weird because on Twitter, people are so upset about this, but it's not like Buxton's trying to be hurt. I think the reality is we're not only not talking about a guy that is probably done playing the outfield. We're talking about a guy that as a DH might simply not be an everyday player. It sucks, but I mean, they did surgery. The knee is chronic. Like I think when we're talking about doing surgery on a chronic knee problem, we're talking about trying to clean it up and we're trying to help it, but it's a chronic problem. Like you can't get rid of just chronic. You can't, you know, my guess is short of a knee replacement, you can't do that. And so it's really, really sad and it sucks. But I think what we have to accept is as a DH, he might not be an everyday player. And I don't see a way around that. And I sure as hell don't see a way that he is ever going to play center, especially in 2023, when they can barely manage to try to keep him in the lineup consistently as a DH.
Yeah, it is sad, man. Like if you look at his last five seasons, well, let me back up a step. He's 29 years old. He's going to be 30 years old for the start of next season. At this point, we're just never going to see the fully healthy in his prime version of Buxton that we thought existed 5 years ago. Because even if he does go back to playing outfield now, he's not as fast as he was 4 or 5 years ago.
Clearly.
I don't think he's a guy that you would put in center field at age 30, even if he ever did go back to the outfield. I'm not saying he couldn't, like if Michael A. Taylor got hurt this year, like, and he's feeling good in a month, but odds are he's done playing center field and he might be done playing outfield. But this is the crazy thing. The last five seasons per 162 games, if you took his numbers and extrapolated them to a full season, his per 162 game averages 40 home runs, over 100 runs scored, 95 extra base hits on average, and an OPS that's 33% above league average, being 860 OPS. I mean, he legitimately, especially if you then add Gold Glove center field prowess, he would be one of the five best players in baseball if he could just stay on the field. But now he's battling chronic injuries and he's battling age more than he was a few years ago. So, you know, if this is, you know, maybe they have to just kind of strategically rest him a little bit. If he has to hit the injured list for a while, it's probably a quicker comeback to DH than it would be if you're planning on playing him in center field. So he remains very much on pace for his second 100-game season of his career. The only other one was back in 2017. Yep. And it's just the reality that you hope that Royce Lewis can sort of take the franchise and take the torch and go forward so that the spotlight is a little bit less on Byron Buxton. So,
and there you go. Yeah, I mean, everyone keeps asking me to, you know, is he ever going to play center field again? I legitimately don't think so. Like, you know, will you make an appearance there maybe? Like in an absolute pinch? Could be. But I think you're going to see him as a full-time DH. That's the 2023 plan. He's got to be a DH and he has to rest now if his knee's going to flare up. And that's just kind of the Byron Buxton they have to get.
Well, here's another question for you guys. And we aren't there for like early. Sometimes they'll go out there at 2 o'clock in the afternoon and take fly balls and stuff. Like when's the last time he even went out and took a fly ball?
I don't think he is.
I've never seen it.
The last I heard he was not.
So it's possible.
He's not practicing to play center field.
In spring training, was he? He didn't play any spring training center field, right? He didn't play in a game in center?
The last I heard was that he was not even, in fact, I think Baldelli talked about this a month ago with Provis. Buxton was not even gearing up to practice out there. So he has basically just been a DH. That's it. The problem now, too, is this. It's not like, oh, is he going to run into a fence or try to make a diving catch? The problem now clearly is this. Simply standing.
It's the wear and tear of it sounds weird, but it's literally just the wear and tear of being on your legs for hours a day, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So if you go out there and repeatedly stand, it's going to cause problems. Again, the condition, as Baldelli said, I think now last spring, it's a chronic problem. It is a chronic problem. It is not just a let's go repair it arthroscopically and it's fine. This is one of the, I think, one of the saddest things that I've seen in sports in this town.
Yeah.
Because of the potential.
So, but there's still, you know, again, just if he needs to sit for a little bit, okay, it's going to flare up. It's going to go back. You just hope that you can manage it so that he's around in September and October, because if he's around in October and Royce Lewis is playing this way and your pitching staff, could he run into a pitch and hit a 3-run homer to win you a playoff game, which is the goal here, a playoff game. We just want to see the Twins win a playoff game before we die.
And once they do that, it'll be game one of the World Series. Buxton will pinch hit. 3-run homer there. Royce Lewis.
Oh,
can you imagine the snow falling at Target Field? Game 7?
I don't believe what I just saw. Let's bring it back. There's your state of the Twins on usually on a Monday. Today we're hitting you on a Tuesday here after the long weekend. So, yeah, if you guys have any Twins topics you'd like to see us dive into on the show, send us a note and hit us up on Twitter. And remember, if you're a frustrated Twins fan too, it's okay. We are here as your Twins therapist, your Minnesota sports therapist, every day on this show. And don't forget Purple Daily today too, posting a little bit later because Judd's going to go with his field goggles and give us some observations live at practice.
They're not goggles, they're glasses. They're big.
Sorry.
I see everything.
See you guys.